Welcome to Inclusion Catalyst with your hosts, Mickey Desai and Susan Cooper. We invite diversity leaders to the table to deconstruct complex social justice issues and showcase the best inclusion practices in our workplaces and our communities.
A racial reckoning has been underway for more than a year, but is it primarily a U.S. matter? What's happening in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the international NGO space? How are practitioners increasing the impact of what they do with greater awareness, thoughtfulness, and meaningful work to improve the lives of more people? Hi, I am Mikhail Peten, a guest host for this episode. In my day job, I serve as Chief of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for All Hands and Hearts, an international NGO focused on long-term recovery after disasters. Recently, I had a conversation with Princess Basley Bethay, Director of the Together Project and Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Interaction. If you are not familiar with Interaction, they are an organization that brings together INGOs to address poverty, human rights issues, challenges to ideals of democracy, climate change, and social instability. Princess serves as chair for the Interaction Coalition DEI Task Force. She and I work with many other individuals from Interaction's member organizations to identify both the barriers and opportunities to address inequities and injustices that undermine the multitude of efforts within the INGO space. Enjoy.
We have known each other now for a couple months, and we've been working together on this initiative with Interaction. I wonder, can you just share a little bit about what has the journey been for you? You know, what was your journey and what led you on this path?
I'll sort of break that up into like two time frames and long term, short term. So like my long term journey is really being committed to like nonprofit program work my entire career. I'm a Return Peace Corps volunteer, so did that in my past. I've only worked for nonprofits here in D.C., specifically around program development, either domestic community work or international-facing work, faith-based work. And so going to the short-term part of my journey, basically to say that, you know, coming to Interaction, I started a project here called the Together Project. And I started that in 2017 as the first manager here at Interaction. And the Together Project is a space where NGOs who are facing discriminatory practices, disinformation, attacks come. And when those, specifically when those attacks are founded on sort of their religious principle or their operating principles or their religious faith. And so already for past 5 years now, I've been working at Interaction around also following the lines of DEI related issues, because some Muslim faith-based groups or even our Jewish groups or Christian groups who find themselves attacked operationally. And so doing that for the past few years and coming upon what everyone experienced in 2020, especially the summer 2020, with just this real awakening in our communities, in our country, but specifically in the sector, and also here in our coalition, of recognizing that there needs to be urgency and stronger commitments made around the way we address DEI-related concerns and issues and how we prioritize them, and just the impact of how all of those concerns really affect the, you know, delivery of aid. It affects our staff, it affects program staff, it affects the participants who benefit in programs abroad. And so at Interaction, because I had been working for those several years around this with the Together Project, it really gave me an opportunity to take that portfolio and grow that and then become Interaction's DEI director. And so, so if you ever see my title, I have like this long director of the Together Project and DEI, but that's because I still manage the Together Project, but I'm now sort of grown into looking at these pieces of diversity, equity, inclusion broadly for our own staff here at Interaction and also for our platform. So for our coalition members, and just the, you know, the tagline for Interaction, we are in a membership alliance based coalition. So we have about 180 or so US based NGOs, and we're the largest alliance of US based NGOs. And so recognizing that before whatever we say or ask our coalition members to do, that internally at Interaction, we need to be that example and we need to be taking those same steps. And so it's been a very interesting journey to sort of land in that position. It wasn't sought after per se to do DEI work in this manner and build and develop and implement around DEI work. But I think it's definitely being, I guess, the right place, the right place at the right time and the right sort of catalyst, unfortunately, of our, like I said, our entire sector waking up and wanting to prioritize this. And so here I am a year later, still building, still learning around it and still on the journey.
That's great. That's great. Thank you for that. This work is, you and I have talked about this. I mean, this work is passion work. It requires you to be tireless because it's really the work that is glamorized, but no one really wants to do. No one wants to. I think in people's minds, they may imagine speaking truth to power and finding the evidence, finding the facts that substantiate, you know, the truth that you're telling, right? But no one really wants to do the work. I mean, I think there are a number of practitioners who are committed to this work, but it is in no way, you know, it is romanticized, I think, in some ways, but it is the work that is, it requires you to every day wake up, roll your sleeves up and get after it, because it is, you know, it is endless. It truly is. And so in thinking about that, can you share, like, what has been a pivotal moment for you?
Yeah. You put it so nicely. It is what we're seeing here in the sector is really just a microcosm of why things don't change in society, right? Like, you know, we have these big grand, recognizing that these things are wrong. This is wrong. Hate is wrong. This is, you know, all of that sort of stuff, but there nothing, we're always complaining, nothing changes, right? Nothing changes in society after the protest and after that, because it takes a lot of work. It takes behavior change. It takes the calling out of systems just as much as the calling out of individuals. And so until those things happen and that accountability is there, it is sometimes, unfortunately, lends itself to a lot of lip service. But, you know, to think about pivotal moments, I don't know if I've had a pivotal moment, but I think that each time over this journey, over the past year that I've like formally become director of this work, each time that I've had a conversation with an owner of this work in this space has really impacted me. Including yourself, like we've had conversations. And I think that much like a lot of topics in our sector, we don't recognize the commitment and the passion that just your daily person has, right? That daily person who's pushing this along. And I've met so many people over the past year and sort of this exploratory space that I've been in, these one-on-one conversations, or the CEO linking me to the person in the organization that actually runs this, or, you know, connecting with, you know, someone abroad who's doing this, you know, for an organization abroad or for a small nonprofit or civil society actor abroad, and hearing the commitments that folks have had around various DEI related issues that didn't just start in 2020, like commitments that have started 10, 15, 20 years ago. And the struggles, right, to keep it going, but recognizing that they haven't stopped, right? Like they're not entering these things anew or anything like that. That has been pivotal, right? To really recognize that there are some really great people. And I say great because it is, it's hard, it's taxing, it is personal, it's not a professional job description alone. It's so personal. And so much of those who own this work in some way, shape, or form have to put in. And so all of those conversations have been pivotal for me and just eye-opening of that it's really impressive. The DEI managers or, you know, chief diversity officers or however their title might fall that, you know, tell me what they're doing in their organization, right? They tell me like the letters that they're sending on the back end. They tell me the things they're pushing, the way they're trying to, you know, put things before board members or VPs or whom have you, like the little pushes to change that so many of these folks have been doing for years is encouraging and motivating. And so, yeah, it's been pivotal for me just to hear those things and recognize those things and try to take those experiences and those leaders and those voices and add to what we're trying to build here at Interaction and add a little bit more fire under the logs that they've kept going for many years.
That's great. That's wonderful. And that's a great segue, you know, because my next question, you know, we've talked about the passion, we've talked about the necessity of tirelessness, but something that's real is compassion fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. Is a real thing. And so can you talk a little bit about like what's giving you life? And you've kind of alluded to it, but mm-hmm. but what's keeping that spark going for you?
Yes, I think one answer is definitely seeing others, hearing others, being in solidarity with others in this space, and you know, recognizing that it's not even competitive. Like if when you win, when you make this go a little further in your organization, the entire sector wins, everybody wins, right? And so I would say that has been one, and two, for just my own personal fatigue, I have really been trying to do more of turning it off a little bit and recognizing that thankfully, right, I'm at a place of employment that is has benefits and that I don't need to just let my comp time and my annual leave and even sick leave, I feel like includes mental health days. I don't need to just let those pile up at the end of the year or lose them or just have them roll over. Like actually being more attentive to taking that time that is allotted for just recharging and not even, yeah, I don't even always say it's relaxation because it's not just about relaxation, but it is the recharging of like the your mind to come back to this work. And so I'm trying to take more time away and more integrally into how I do this work, because if you look up after a while, you just realize, wow, I just worked 6 months straight or 8 months straight and haven't taken one day for yourself. And so trying to do that a little bit more. And then I think third, what recharges me is to really see the connections of all of this outside of my space. And by what I mean by that is really to say that this, you know, this isn't a singular movement. So, you know, when I look in the arts and recognize that, you know, there's so many new television shows or actors or actresses who are taking this on. Or if you look in even in recreation, like just sports, how just as a lot of institutions in the US like are all sort of waking up, mm-hmm. just really getting involved in the arts and or political movements, for example, is actually recharging, and it's validating to see everyone moving in the same direction. So the more that I can be a volunteer, a participant, or some sort of actively involved in other pieces of DEI work outside of our sector and my daily job, is recharging, and it helps me to really, you know, enjoy something else, be involved in something else, but also see that connection here to what I do on a daily basis for interaction.
You know, I agree with you so heartedly that it is validating. It is about self-care. It's about finding the balance. And I think for a lot of us practitioners, it is it's so important to see, as you're talking about, how this work shows up in spaces where traditionally you would not have made the connection. You know, it just, you know, it just wasn't part of the reality. You know, it wasn't part of what was considered to be normal. And so, yeah, you know, knowing that and seeing how things have played out and are evolving, my next question for you is, what were you seeing or not seeing in the nonprofit sector that prompted you to lean into this initiative at Interaction? And also, what were some of those early conversations like when you were trying to persuade leadership that this is the right thing to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the piece that I found lacking at the beginning of this work is probably the commitment, right? The commitment as far as not just the statement, not just the thing that gets posted on your website or the page after in your employee resource guide, that sort of thing, but you know, the tangible commitments of we're bringing in third-party consultants, we're doing surveys, we're doing focus groups, we're really trying to benchmark and see where we are, or commitments as far as you know, funding commitments, like recognizing that, you know, I mentioned there's about 180 organizations in our coalition, but you know, for a lot of reasons, capacity reasons as well, not all of them have a person looking at diversity, equity, inclusion issues. It might be tacked on to someone else's position, or it might fall under sometimes, like there's a lot of gender and as a big topic in this sector, as you know. So it might, you know, fall a little bit under there, and maybe it's a catch-all. And so recognizing that this topic has to be a priority. You know, it has to be the start of every program, whether your program is WASH or food security or disaster relief or whatever it is, that diversity, commitments to diversity and inclusion is the core and where you begin. And I think that what I found are a lot of statements, right, to that fact, or alluding to that fact, but not really the tangible, measurable, you know, that's another word, the measurable piece of that actually happening, or the accountability, right, or that being included into goals or included into evaluations of programs or evaluations of organizations. And I think that one thing that you know, strikes that really illuminated is last summer, is the influx of responses and social media responses after the murders of George Floyd and others in 2020, and how it in the cycle that we are now, especially in the 24-hour news cycle, and where everyone's trying to increase their visibility on Twitter and these things like that, it really became clear that the moment was, for some, only being used as that, only being used as like, we have to say something, or we have to do something, or we have to put our name out there around this topic. But you know, that failure to actually have that be translated to how does your organization look, right? How does your board look? How does your leadership look? How are, you know, the inclusivity aspects for your LGBT staff or your disability inclusion and things like that? How is that happening in your organization and in your programming? Is what I find still an issue, but definitely initially the disconnect between those things. But what, yeah, you know, the disconnect between what's being said and what is.
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, the key term that you mentioned was that accountability. You know, accountability to ourselves, accountability to peers, to a community around a particular organization, and accountability across an industry, right? Accountability to society. Watching this grow over the past year and past couple of years, it's in some ways exciting, and it's been a long time coming. But I really, you know, I want it to sustain, you know. I want goals to be met, and I want missions to change. I want objectives to integrate DEI, right? And I'm sure you probably want the same things. You know, I think all practitioners in this space, I mean, we want to see the same things. And so as I think about interaction and its network, is there anything else like it? You know, the paradigm shifting work in existence?
Yes, actually, I would say by and large, counterparts and partners across domestically in the sector, but also abroad are moving on this work from a lot of different angles, right? If you look domestically at umbrella organizations or membership alliance groups that are leading on this, you know, our partners and friends over Humanism are doing a lot around this. Society for International Development is doing a lot of this. But also when we take time and stop to look to the actual diversity groups, those groups who are diverse in this space, right? Those Black led and Black, largely Black and inspired or these organizations who are female led or organizations or movements that are disability focused and disability inclusion focused. There are a lot in this space moving on this, right? I mean, I could name them all, but you know, just as far as partners that I've worked with and talked to, I mean, look at WCAPS, Women of Color, Events in Peace and Security. You look at Black Professionals in International Affairs, for gender, so many coalitions, women and girls groups, and also disability inclusion just within our own organization with FHI360 and Mobility International USA and Humanity and Inclusion. There's a lot of synergy there, but you know that, right, that's can be sometimes headquartered or housed here in the U.S. with global impacts and global programming, but you know, thinking abroad and recognizing that, you know, these conversations have been happening in the global South. These conversations are happening in the UK. Our friends at Bond and Forest are having these conversations. Folks in you know, largely in the continent of Africa, having these conversations, like Adesso and others. And so there's a lot of pockets. There's a lot of synergy. And they're even sector, right? Peace building has been moving on this to strengthen peace building actors with folks like Peace Direct and Alliance for Peace Building, likewise in other spaces, the humanitarian sector with the IASC and those sort of spaces are talking about this. And so it's happening in all pockets from all angles. Some is race, some is diversity and inclusion altogether, some is looking at gender. And so there is plenty of opportunities to join in. I think where Interactions Coalition is entering the space and collaborating with various groups like the ones that I named is really because we do have this niche of US-based NGOs, right? All US-based NGOs who are working abroad. So the complexity of the fact that they're headquartered or regional offices that are here in the state are under the history and the systemic oppression of the historical context is here in the US, right? And that can be different in other spaces, but knowing our historical context and recognizing that all of our organizations are working under those across race, across gender, across LGBT historical contexts, and also dealing with that for their headquarters, but recognizing that they didn't have offices across the world with their own regional variations of how DEI concerns are seen or experienced, which makes, you know, the task of NGOs, right? I don't take it lightly, the task of NGOs to do this work. It can be quite complex and nuanced, especially as they move past the U.S. Western context of DEI work and move into other countries and regions. But it is necessary, right? It's necessary. And so that is sort of the angle where interaction is sort of the lens that we're coming in with our DEI work. But yes, there are definitely many groups working on these issues.
And so how has your professional network responded? Like not just interaction, but, you know, you talked about work that you were doing before you transitioned into your directorship and your tenure as director leading this initiative for interaction. When you think about your network, and I'm sure you are connected with practitioners who may not be involved in anti-racist work or even in DEI work, how has your professional network responded?
It's been really favorable. I've gotten a lot of support. You know, it's because it's connected. And I think that everyone's awakening to the connection. And so, you know, I've worked in a law center space as well previously. And, you know, that some contacts that I have there have been very supportive, like, because you think of the legal context, right? Like, I think everybody's aware of all of these different pieces and also, you know, professional networks and previous positions, like where I've worked largely a domestic community-based work. And that has also been a very supportive space because of recognizing that these are the things that are happening in our communities, right? Like, you know, looking across Minneapolis or whatever a situation pops up, like there's that recognition of, oh, you're doing this for interaction or a coalition that's international facing, but there's linkages and there's cause and effect. And I think, again, going back to the response and of the uprising of George Floyd's murder, just, you know, you would see the footage from South Africa, from Cape Town, from Paris, wherever, you know, calling out things happening in Minneapolis, right? And so it's been largely favorable moving into the space, and especially in my faith-based community, right? Like recognizing that this commitment is both and of domestic and also of all of the pieces of our foreign assistance work. And, you know, not, as you mentioned, like at the beginning of your question, that within interaction, the response has been really, really, really good, right? Like, and I don't want to say that as I'm surprised, because it's, maybe I'm a little surprised. It has been really a supportive space across the board, honestly. The CEOs in our coalition and in our sector have been really open to learning in this space and listening in this space. Interaction has held like quite a few different learning opportunities for our CEOs. And that's been interesting to see and be a part of and see the vulnerability, right? Another buzzword in this space, the vulnerability is real for our leaders in this space. And I've been quite pleased at how our leaders are showing up. But and to say that even across other staff levels, and which is usually where I work in with our coalition task force that you're a part of, but the response to this work from directors to managers to interns to associates, like everyone's invited to the Coalition Task Force. And that has been really encouraging, and to see people, you know, carve out that time, sometimes twice a week, sometimes three times a week, carve out that time to meet together, to unpack these concerns, to learn, to hear, to share, to do the research on their own. I have groups now in our task force, like doing smaller groups and delving into research. And so just to see all of that motivation and activity around really moving this work forward is really exciting, and I'm very pleased with it.
Great. I want to jump ahead. And so you've talked a lot about where things were, where things are now. I want to shift and ask you, what is the future of this work for you? And what are your goals? Like when you 5, 7, 10 years from now, you look back, right? What do you want to be able to say? And so in order to have, you know, perspective, what do you see the future being?
Oh gosh, the first answer is to say that 5, 7 years from now, I don't want people to be starting again. that is a goal. I don't want this to be lost in the murk and the mire of whatever happens next in the political cycle, or whatever happens next, you know, what have you. So sustainability is definitely a goal. And then second, really to equip our coalition, but also the sector, with the tools to do this, to talk about it. And first, the tools to talk about it. And I think that is sometimes where the lack of consistency happens, and where things fall off, or people sort of go quiet because not everyone feels confident, you know, talking about DEI issues, or they feel knowledgeable about talking about DEI issues. And so that is a goal in this work, is that when we get to a point in our task force to release a DEI approach to our coalition, that it gives people, or it arms our people with language, with definitions, with tools, with things that also then translate past the Western context, which is why we're doing some intentional outreach to expand past our own circle, our own knowledge, so that it gives them that confidence to move on this work, because this work has to be done at every level, the individual level, the organizational level, CEO level, like all of it, programmatic level, the country director level, your country staff level, your taxi driver in, you know, South Sudan, all of it, right? Like everyone has to feel like they can do this, and that they can own it, and that they can call out when something is gone wrong, when there's an issue. And so that's really what I hope, that, you know, 5 to 7 years from now, it's the group, the people that are working around this, that are talking about this, has just gotten larger, and it's become more ingrained in our work, and it's become second nature, in 5 to 7 years is the goal.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, those are all my questions. This was fabulous. Thank you so much. That was incredible.
Thank you for having me.
That's the show. I would like to thank Princess for sharing the details of her ongoing work leading Interactions DEI Task Force, which is committed to sharing an industry approach across its 180 member alliance of organizations and beyond. See the show notes for more information about the task force, as well as Interactions DEI efforts. Follow Interactions Happenings on Twitter at interaction.org. Please consider subscribing to Inclusion Catalyst wherever you normally listen to your podcasts. Also, recommend this show to your families, friends, communities, and coworkers. Again, I am guest host Mikhail Peten. Most importantly, thank you, the listeners.
You can bring your stories to the table as a partner and a host on the Inclusion Catalyst podcast. Visit inclusioncatalyst.com and click the link that says join us as a guest host.
And that's it for this episode of Inclusion Catalyst. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues.